You don't need it.
When we first started this company, we were so excited because we could not believe we had our hands on something this good. And I'm just going to tell you, and it was leaking. We were like, you pay all this money in and you get all your money back? That was money back term. It was like, what? What? And we got leads, and we can talk to people, and when we're out there, we can sell them term, we can sell them term money back, it don't matter. And you give them all their money back, that's crazy. And nobody knows about this. And the people that do know about it, the old insurance people, don't believe it, which is almost word for word what you said last night. That's where we were. We had no prejudices about insurance. All we were is we wanted to make, listen to this, easy now, $100,000 a year. And me and Art Leisure had a dream of one day maybe making $250,000 for 2 years in a row. That was 10 years ago. Well, now we've been through this bank crisis. Now we've been on some private jets. Now we've seen what box seats look like. Now we've seen what a cruise in over there in Rome. We see they need some help with that cathedral thing. Dude, that thing's falling down. where the Colosseum. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in this world. And now we got Tim Goad on our side, who by God needs about $150,000 this month for some things he's trying to put together. And it'd be nice if we could all get on that trail and start sending something weekly and monthly and start helping him build that ministry. I'm not kidding. So now we got us a cause, and now we got a product. You know how that money back, it went from $60 a month to $90 a month? Now we got a product that goes from $90 a month to how much, Russell? $4,000 a month, $5,000 a month, and people already have the money, and it's the largest wealth transfer in America. And you think I ain't jacked up thinking this thing? I called Barry Clarkson this morning. I started telling him. I left a message. Call me back. He said, dude, you got you a revolution on your hands. I said, bro, we're going to need some help up in here. He said, well, Friday morning, he's on with an activity cause. So, guys, I am so jacked up. I'm so fired up about Patrick Kelly. And look who we found with the personality and the fit last night. Was that just sitting here going like, yeah, we got us a fit. You know, sometimes you say, we got us a fit. So let's get him up on the stage and hear from him all morning long. Let's go.
Technology. I'm gonna.
There we go.
We're coming. All right. Yeah. A little louder. All right. We're getting that volume up. I want to just sort of go back to a couple things that Andy just said. You know, Andy. Where's Andy? I always like to know where Andy. I gotta keep my eyes.
He moves around.
Oh, there he is over there. Okay. Andy, you talked about the Colosseum. But that baby's falling down, right? It's in bad shape. Why is that thing falling down? You don't need to answer. I don't want to put you on the spot. But let's think about it. I mean, in its basic form, it's falling down because it never changed. It never got updated. It was built, and it was just magnificent at the time. And then it was magnificent at one point in time. I mean, it was just like, it was the place in the world, right? You can be the greatest place in the world, and if you never change and keep up with the times, what happens, Andy? Starts to crumble.
Goes right back where it comes from.
So I think that's sort of what we're doing here today. It's not, again, we're not taking anything away from the grandeur of today. We're just planning for 100 years down the road. If I can use that as an analogy. I don't know what number of years we're actually planning, but probably not 100. But we might be. We might be. One other thing, I remembered this morning. Sometimes I have my best ideas in two places. in the shower and driving in a car. Why? I don't know. Just where. So in the shower, I remembered something from Andy's book last night that I wanted to just take a little further. There are four referral characteristics. Is this loud enough?
No.
Okay.
No.
There are four characteristics that if you do these four things, you will be referred, and they're the most basic, simple merit. You see this list, and you would bypass this list because it's so basic. And one of the things that Andy said in his book about finishing what he started, that his mom said, my mama said, one thing about this kid is he always finished what he started. Well, guess what? That's what made me think of it, Andy, because that's one of the four referral principles. Here are the four. If you do these four things, you'll be referred to people. Number one, finish what you start. Number two, say please and thank you. Number three, I'll go back through them again. I got to get them out before I forget them. Do what you say you're going to do. And fourth, show up on time. Finish what you start. Say please and thank you. Show up on time and do what you say you're going to do. Now, is that not the most basic list ever? But you think back. Anyone who you've ever referred probably did those four things. Did they not? I mean, think about a contractor. That's a perfect example. When you have a contractor working for you, how many contractors, number one, show up on time? We've had like this 2-3 year remodeling project going on. They don't just not show up on time of the day. They don't even show up the same week, you know? But you give me a contractor who says, I'll be there at 9 o'clock Monday morning, they show up at 10 to 9. Wow, my contractor, I have all his business that he's had the last few has come from a referral from me, every piece. Because I'm telling people, you got to work this. He does what he says he's going to do. He shows up when he says he's going to be there. Please and thank you. So that just made me think of, as we kick off this morning, going back to Andy's book, I wanted to bring that back up and make sure that you think through anyone you refer have those characters. Now, you know what? I got to tell you, this group is so good. You have taken Southern hospitality to just a whole new level. Do you hear that on the roof? Where am I from?
Yeah.
I mean, did you have to be quite so hospitable? I'm trying to get away from this stuff. And they just floor it. Man, this is beyond Seattle, but it really does rain as much in Seattle as they say. It's just been a miserable one that we've had. So I was hoping to get away, but you know what? Just you guys and your kindness and hospitality, you know, we think Patrick will feel more comfortable if it's just a downpour. So thank you, I think. By the way, Andy, last night in that video, that video, he's going like this. I mean, do you see his face moving that siren? Andy, here's a question. You ask anyone, which one is the child and which one is the parent in that video? Your son's standing there so mature and so, his dad's going, in a whole different plan. I love that video, because that's what I'd be doing, and my son would be going, Dad, you're embarrassing yourself. Dad, they don't quite get it yet, but they will. Fitz asked me, where's Fitz? There he is, okay. He asked me a question about a specific case that I want to make sure, and not because it's a specific case, but because it's under a category, that we cover that, but I'm not going to start there. I want to sort of save it for a little bit later, but just make sure that when we get to that you remind me before we wrap up. This, do I need this open up here? Is this for anybody? Is this someone who's trying to shut this door, or is this what I'm running off of? Okay. Can we bring up the PowerPoint where we left off from last night? I think you still have the memory set. And then, look at that. Do you have it or? Okay, yeah, take your time. It'll say, I think, short presentation. But I'll tell you what, while we're opening that up, I'm still on this.
Yeah, it is on.
Okay, sorry, my bad.
smart enough to do it.
Right there.
Oh,
so I am loaded in there.
I'll tell you what, why don't we do this? If someone wants to come get this running, I'm going to take Fitz's example while we get the power coming up and running. No sense of wasting any time. Okay?
So if someone wants to get us up on that PowerPoint, I'm going to do this. And then from the camera side, that worked out really well last night. If we can focus on this piece of paper when I'm drawing on it, and that way everyone can see over there as well. So Fitz came up to me and said, can I use a real example?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Said, my mom has money in a tax-qualified plan in Iowa. And she doesn't need that money right now to live on. But she has to take the distribution. How old is she?
74. Right?
74. So you know, only the IRS can come up with this law. On April 1st, the year after someone turns 70 and a half, they have to begin taking money out of their tax-qualified plan, whether they want it or not. Who would come up with a law that says April 1st after you turn 70 and a half? I mean, who measures their half birthday after you get past the age of three? I mean, you know, 3 year old goes, I'm three and a half. You know, they understand. But 70? Come on. Anyway. So he's in a situation, his mom has all this money, and I want to sort of distinguish, and I'll keep talking loud because of that right here. What we're not talking about today, and I'll get into it while we get the life insurance piece. But we're not talking about taking money from someone's IRA, from their 401k, and rolling it out of that and putting it into life insurance. Okay? Now, we could have a whole separate discussion. Would it make sense to do that? Possibly. On paper it might, but I do not encourage people to do that. I don't want to be in that liability space where they say down the road, well, you told me, you know, what I do is take new money, okay? So I'm going to distinguish between two different groups of people here. When you're talking, I'd say most of the lecture, I'm mixing up so many things because we're putting this a little bit out of order. But what this is called, in the book, there's a four-page chapter called the IRA Rescue. Read the four-page chapter, the IRA Rescue. Here is who that is for. Usually I say this at the end of the day, so it's sort of fun to kick this off at the very beginning while everyone's still fresh. Ideally, you're looking for someone who is around 70 years old. You're looking for someone who probably has money in an IRA. And often, but not always, someone who's either a widow or a widower. Now why? Well, I already told you why 70-ish. Because it ain't around, just to keep it simple, around age 70, whether you want to take, whether the person needs the money, wants the money, the IRS says you've got to take it. Now I'll just use Sally. Sally's my mom's name. So how does Sally feel about having to take money out of an account she doesn't want, she doesn't need, she doesn't know what to do with, but she has to take it anyway. And not only does she have to take it, she has to pay the tax on it. Let me tell you, that ruffles some feathers for people. They don't like being told that they have to take the money out, right? And they don't know what to do with it. They'd rather just let it sit there and grow and maybe pass on somewhere. Well, that's why these two caveats typically, because if money is in an IRA, 401k, they all fall under the same umbrella called a tax-qualified plan. Usually it's a self-directed IRA for that one, and the government says at that age you have to take it. So if you know people that have those two characteristics, and the reason why widow or widower often is because when two people, when both husband and wife are still alive, they have all these plans to travel, to spoil the grandkids. They don't know who's going to live the longest, who's going to outlive the other, so they don't want to spend their money too fast. But when one of the spouses dies, if the money coming in was enough to support both of them, the money coming in is more than enough to support the woman. So now, using this money that's in the IRA, you wouldn't have said before post office were alive typically, well, we don't need it one because, you know, we don't know what the plans are for that yet. But when, is your mom aware?
Yes.
Okay, so she would fit in that category. And that's part of the reason, I think, why that money that's sitting in his bucket over here probably isn't as needed for her right now because her demands on that just don't need to tap into it. Okay, so here's the deal. Folks, let me tell you, if someone in their, upper years has money in an IRA, it is absolutely the worst place for them to die with money. Because, we'll just use $100,000 to keep it simple. With $100,000 in an IRA, when that person dies and it passes on to their children, all of that money gets taxed as income in the current year to the heir. Now, assuming they have some other, because 100 would turn at the highest tax rate, but let's assume we're just using 100 for easy illustration, because 100,000, if that was all there was, it wouldn't be the highest tax rate yet, but there's going to be other assets besides that. So let's just assume that when someone dies, and that money's in the IRA, most of the time it gets taxed at the highest income tax rate passed on the children because the way that it's unique in terms of how it gets taxed. And stocks, when stocks and mutual funds pass over, they get a step up in basis. You know what that means? That means that if your parents bought them for $10 and now they're worth $100, when they pass, you hear new basis becomes $100. You don't have to pay tax on that 90% or that $90 worth of growth. With an IRA, every penny the child receives is taxed in the current year as income tax. Okay? So there's $100,000, and I'm going to just make round numbers. That $100,000, I used to use 40% because we were going to that, it looked like, and it looks like only 2 years off from that anyway, so I'll use that number. Now it's 35, we'll use 35, we'll use the real number. 35%. That's $100,000. So when Sally dies and has $100,000 in her IRA, $65,000 of it is going to pass to the children. $35,000 is going to go straight to our favorite uncle on the same. Okay? So, and I think in the packets, I will make sure and send Fitz to the group here. There's a one-sheet IRA rescue summary that I have that I don't think I brought with me, but it's in the packets because I didn't know if you'd look for it. But I'll send it down. So here's a simple question you ask Sally. Sally, if there was a way that you could double or triple the money that you pass on to kids, still keep full access and control of that money, would something like that possibly interest you? So if you could double or triple the amount of money that you passed on to your kids, but still have full access and control to your existing money, would something like that possibly interest you? Why? Here's what you do, folks. It's really simple. Now remember, this $100,000 at age 70-ish, the IRS says Sally's got to take a distribution. And about the amount she'd have to take would be about, it changes every year, but we'll just say about $3,500. Well, what's Sally going to do with that $3,500? She doesn't know what to do with it. She really doesn't need it. She doesn't know where to put it. And that's what you're looking for. By the way, I think I need to back up a little bit. What you're looking for here is not just someone with money in an IRA, but when you ask, when you talk to the client, you find money in an IRA, and you just look at it, it's like your mom said, Mom, what's your plan for that money? What's it there for? What are you going to do with it? You've got to find out why the money's there. Mom, the salary, what's your plan with this money? And if they say anything other than, well, I need it for my living expenses each and every month. If they say anything other than that, you know you found your money. Now, if they say, well, I need it for my living expenses, then don't touch it. That's there for their living expenses, okay? But if they say, oh, it's rainy day money, it's just there for my kids. I want to pass it on someday. Whatever. If they say anything other than, I need it, my living, go, that's when you ask the question. Well, Sally, what if there was a way that I could show you how to double or triple that money that you can pass on, still keep full access and control of the existing account? What do you think about that?
That would be pretty cool, but I'm not sure how you do it.
It's so easy for us. Here's how you do it. You take the $100,000, you take the money that's coming out of the mandatory distribution, and I'm going to oversimplify right now. You might need to read, you know, come back and talk a little bit more. An easy way to say it is, Sally, let's buy $100,000. Now on this may or may not be an IUL. Forget everything I'm going to say the rest of the day. Forget everything I said yesterday. This is a whole standalone separate concept, okay? But this might be a simple level death benefit, option A death benefit, universal life insurance, okay? Just inexpensive, permanent insurance. So you say, Sally, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take that 35, oh, one of the other things I like to say to Sally, Sally, what if you could sort of really stick it to your Uncle Sam? What do you think about that? That's really good. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take that $3,500 that you don't need, you don't want really, you don't know what to do with, and we're going to buy $100,000 of life insurance. So, Sally, now when you die, oh, by the way, all we're doing is using this money that has to come out of it anyway, right? So now when you die, Sally, instead of this $100,000 turning to $65,000 passing to your kids, by simply using this money you don't need, you don't want, you don't know what to do with, and buy another $100,000, when you die down the road, your kids are still going to get that $65,000 from what's left in the IRA. But now they're going to get $100,000 in death benefit of life insurance, which is income tax free at death, right? So instead of $65,000 passing on, they're going to pass on $165,000 to their children, which is almost three times, 2.5 times the $65,000. So you've almost tripled what's passed on. But here's the cool thing. Have we touched, have we done anything? You're not saying, hey, give me your $100,000, I'm going to go do something with it. You haven't touched that. If she wants to stop this at any time, she can just cancel it. She still has full access and control to her existing account. But simply by using the money she doesn't want, she doesn't need, she doesn't know what to do with, and buying a low-cost, low-cost permanent life insurance policy, she's almost triple what she can pass on. Before you get to the question, let me show you one other thing. Let's say Sally has a charitable bent. Let's say she wants to leave money to a charity. It gets even better. Because I might ask Sally, Sally, do you have any charities that you'd like to leave money to? Well, yeah, I hope, you know. Well, what if we can cut Uncle Sam out of the equation all together? Because Uncle Sam in this deal still gets his $35,000, doesn't he? So it's this simple, folks. When she buys the life insurance policy, the beneficiary of the life insurance policy is her kids. IRAs have a beneficiary provision. She simply makes the beneficiary of her IRA a charity. Now because her IRA at death goes to a charity, 100% of it passes to the charity. Uncle Sam gets nothing. Her kids get the full $100,000, which is almost double what they would have gotten. So now instead of passing on $65,000 total to her kids get almost twice as much at $100,000. The charity gets $100,000, a full 100% of her IRA, and Uncle Sam gets nothing. So just a little concept, please, to warm you up here this morning.
Number one, do you think that's better to pull out the taxes than do a stretch IRA if the kids get the IRA?
Great question. Because the question, and obviously this is an attempt to oversimplify, not getting the stretch IRA provision. There is a provision for IRAs passing on the next generation that says if you take it out over a great number of years, then you can reduce the tax burden on the next generation. Okay, here's what I usually say to the groups on that. In real time, if those greedy little buggers called children can get all their hands on the money today, or stretch it out over 20 years, which one are they taking? You ask any accountant, they're taking it today, because you know what? They've already got the Ferrari picked out for mom and I. So, while yes, that would be another way to do it, this still will pass on a lot more money than that would pass on. But the reality of it is, I don't think most of the time the stretch IRA is being elected because they don't want to wait X number of years to get their money. And then right behind you, there's another question. Very good.
Assuming that $3,500 comes out as an inventory distribution at age 70, does that decrease to something like $100,000? Does that balance remain static?
Okay, it's a good question. And again, this was my... This is for the purpose of purely illustrating that. Oversimplified, but I do want to address that. Because I at one point I actually sort of caught myself saying, do I go down that road very far or do I just keep it simple? I kept it simple, but let me address that. And great point. The other thing too, that money, that $3,500 coming out of there is taxable income. So she's going to have to pay tax on that. So she's not going to have $3,500 to spend unless she's spending, paying tax out of her other income. But the question on this is, well, how would you still have $100,000 left to pass on if you're taking money out? Well, let's think about this. This IRA probably is growing, right? So let's say it has a 5% growth. Now again, there is a formula that the government says you have to take out this much. So this is really for the illustration of, let's just assume, well, regardless of whether she buys the life insurance or not, this is the first thing I can say. Regardless of whether she buys this, this account will be the same size, correct? Because she's had to take this money out, whether she's put it in a bank in a CD or whether she's bought life insurance, this account will be the same size regardless. But in this example, the reason I leave it at 100 is for simplification of illustration. But let's just assume if this account did grow by 5%, she's going to make $5,000 a year, or let's even say 3%. If that account is in something that's going to grow 3%, she's going to make $3,000 on that account. So that $100,000 doesn't stay static. So in some cases, really, this money that you're using to buy this extra sometimes is just mostly the growth within the account to begin with. The principle or purpose stays the same, but that's really just for simplification. You have to actually see what it is. Now, the other way to do it, and I'm going to close this piece right here. The other way to do it is, instead of just doubling this and saying, well, you got $100,000, let's pick $100,000, is to say, okay, how much is coming out? How much does have to come out in mandatory distributions? Reduce it by taxation. So if they say $5,000 has to come out, take her tax rate, reduce it by that. Now we have $3,500. And simply plug into the computer how much life insurance will $3,500 a year buy? Because her amount will actually go up a little bit each year. So if you start at $35,000, that's what you're going to have to take at least from there forward. So that way, you know, it may come up, the computer may solve, if you plug in, okay, solve for face value, we have $3,500 a year to put in, and the computer says, oh, she can buy $87,500 worth of traditional universal life insurance option A, boom, there it is. So, does that help answer the question, Fitz?
Absolutely.
So what time today is that app getting signed? Just did, yeah. Question, okay. Yes.
I'm sorry, I missed the first part. Are you wanting to save the or save me and have to purchase that $100,000 policy?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have to? No, you absolutely don't have to.
Right, but at that age, you know, 50% of the people can't go through underwriting or they're going to have issues with that. So it's going to be a whole lot more to fund that policy. To fund that insurance policy.
The obvious caveat in this is they've got to be able to qualify for insurance. But don't forget, too, insurance companies don't look at 70-year-olds the same way because premium's a lot more. That's why the premium's more expensive. That's, you know, the more expensive premium is calculated, in fact, they're not as healthy as a 26-year-old. So I don't know what percentage would or wouldn't get through, but you're right. You're going to have a handful of those that it may not be something that they can do because they can't qualify for the life insurance. There would be then a fallback position you go through. But again, you could plan for this in advance. If you've got a 50-year-old, one reason to buy life insurance now might be, so, you know, you can achieve this down the road without having to buy this. But I don't want to go, again, I'm just trying to keep things improving. Well, you know what, that leads me to a point. We're going to transition now back off of this. That was just, that was a little four-page chapter in the book that you guys can go look at. I'm going to give you, this is a Patrick Kelly principle. Someone told me early in my career, and it had two things, and it has served me very, very well. Someone said to me right as I started 20 years ago, Patrick, in this business, work for the rule, not the exception. Work for the rule, not the exception. Do you know how much of our time we spend working for the exception? What if this happened? What about even that question? And I appreciate that question. And it just spurred that point. A lot of time when you look at your life and look at your business, you say, well, but what about, because here's the deal. 80% of the time, it fits right here in the middle, and it works. And we spend all of our time fretting and thinking about the 20%, and here's where this other principle comes in. Folks, you're not needing to bat 1,000 in this business. If you find someone, like when we go through what we're going to go through with you today, it may be the best thing in the world for them, and they still may not want to do it. They may have all the money in the world to do it, and they still may not want to do it. And that's just the way some people are wired. And you know what? If you spend your time trying to convince that person of why you're right and why this is the best thing to do, you would have spent more time than just going and selling three new people who are interested in what you have. Woo! Okay? So don't feel like it's your job to change someone's mind. Remember the scorpion. Some people are just that way. There's nothing you will be able to do to change their mind. And so I guess the same thing would be on this, and that's a very valid question. You're going to run it. Now, sometimes the takeaway is the most powerful part of a sale. And you can say to them, you know, as good as, tell me your name. Kathy? Yeah. So, Kathy, and pretend you're the client now. As good as this is, there's one thing that still needs to happen. You got to be able to qualify for insurance. And so that's going to take us a little while to figure out. But we'll submit that. We'll figure that out ahead. Sometimes when people think, you mean I might not be able to get it? That's the best sales tool we've got. And so don't be afraid of that. But you're right. Not 100% of those are going to go through. Does that help? Okay. But folks, if you spend your time working for the rule and not the exception, because everyone else in life is telling you, work for the, you know, plan for the exception, keep all the paperwork for that one out of 10,000 people that might come back and, you know, work for the rule, okay? All right, how's our PowerPoint doing? Beautiful. All right, let's jump to it. Now, I wasn't planning on starting back on this slide. I'm planning on starting here, but I've got to tell you one more story. Because the stories are so fun. There was an individual. Yeah, let's just with the rain. I think let's turn that mic up a little bit. I'll just sort of, and I'll talk loud. I try. Okay, there we go. That's a little better. There was a guy. I was doing a training like today on October 26, 2009, in Atlanta, not far from here. And there was a guy who was there, whose name was Tim. He's from Chicago. Never met Tim before. Just like some of you probably will, you know, have success stories, and I'll hear about them, and I'll probably use your name with permission later. That would be like Tim. We didn't know he was going to be a success story yet. By the way, I'll tell you this. Out of this, now this group might be different, but out of a normal group, 20% of the group will actually do anything with the knowledge they get. The other 80%
Things are going to, nothing happens. And it's up to you to determine, are you the 20 or the 80? But it's absolutely true. And we kept good statistics. When I go and do a training, only 20% of the people actually take action. Well, Tim was one of the 20%. Tim thought he was killing it. He was making all, he never sold life insurance before in his life. He was an annuity guy, 100% annuities. And he would make between $350,000 and $400,000 a year selling annuities. So, you know, by all standards, that's a pretty decent living, huh? I mean, you know, he's most got a bill plate, as we showed yesterday. So $350,000, $400,000 a year, and he came to a training. He'd never submitted a life policy before. And he heard what I shared, what I'm going to share with you guys today, and he was part of the 20% that said, you know what? I've been missing out. I have been missing the boat on this particular sale. So I happened to travel with this group on their incentive trip, which I think you guys have trips, don't you? You have trips that you qualify for? I honestly don't know. I haven't asked any, but I'm assuming that you do. I'll tell you another. The only good piece of advice my manager ever gave me was, Patrick, qualify for every pinpoint, plaque, and trip that you can qualify for, and you'll be very successful. I'm just going to tell you, if you have a trip offered to you, do not miss the trip. Because those babies are, you will grow more. I mean, this is one of those rabbit trails I don't normally have the chance to go down. You'll learn more, you'll grow more, and you'll never miss one ever again. So whatever it takes to get there, you made that trip. Okay? Well, I was on one of these trips as a speaker, and it was the first night. We were in Mexico, beautiful Four Seasons resort in Mexico, and the tables were spread out on the sand, and my wife and I had literally been there 15 minutes. We got to the dinner, had a little bite of food, and Tim comes up. I hadn't seen him for 6 months, and he taps me on the shoulder, and he goes, hey, Patrick, do you remember me? And I happened to decide to have dinner with him that night. I said, hey, Tim, sure, let me see you. He said, I'd like you and your wife to come meet my wife. And so I said, well, we'd love to do that. So we finished up dinner, we walked over on the bed, and all wives start chatting here pretty quickly. And he pulls me aside, and again, I'm going to give you the word-for-word conversation. You think I made it up to try and be humorous? I didn't. It's a word-for-word conversation. He pulls me aside and goes, Patrick, let me tell you why I want to meet with my wife. Because in our house, she called your book the book. Wow, when you say that. I mean, first of all, the book in our house has a whole different kind of kitchen. So you know, I'm just like, wow, thank you. He goes, matter of fact, my kids call your book the book. And it's like, I go, that's really cool. My kids don't even know I wrote a book. There's some truth to that. So yeah, he goes, let me tell you why my wife calls your book the book. He says, Patrick, because since I saw you in October in Atlanta, I've been able to buy my office building with cash. I've been able to remodel my home with cash, and we're now working on the landscaping in our yard. I go, really? Tell me what's going on. He told me, sir. So I went to the IMO and I verified his numbers. This was 6 months after seeing this for the first time, just like you guys are today. He did $410,000 of target premium in 6 months. Well, here's what's cool, is I happen to be back at the same IMO exactly 1 year to the day. It was October 26, 2010. Same calendar day a year later. And Tim was there with three of his producers. That would be like us, what day is today, March 30th? It'd be like March 30th of 2012. You're back here. I met you for the first time. I saw you 6 months later. And you brought three of your team members back. And I verified everything I talked, just shared with you with Tim, to make sure that story hadn't changed or grown, that I forgot, word for word, exactly the same. But here's what he did. I said, Tim, and I didn't know the answer yet. I said, tell me, in the last 12 months, because it's now, ironically, been 12 months today, in the last 12 months, what have you done? And he stood up and told the group a little bigger than this, Patrick, in the last 12 months, I have made $720,000 in life insurance commissions. On top of the 300 plus I was doing in my annuities. My annuities actually grew because I was meeting with more people. But I made $750,000 in additional income in the last year. Folks, how many careers can you just add it? Just a small little $750,000 in a year. Will everybody do that? No. Can you do it? Yes. but you're not going to do it if you don't do anything with it, okay? But those are the stories. Those are the things. I can tell you story after story, not all that good. That's one of my better stories. But it's a great story, and he is just, he didn't know what he didn't know. That's one of my favorite phrases. Sometimes we just don't know what we don't know, you know? It's like, we just don't know. So we don't know any better. Did I use that dark, I'm not going to go there. Okay, let's keep moving on. All right. I want to take you back now 20 years. When I started in the business, and I don't think any of you have, has anyone been in this business 20 years? Okay, how long have you been, roughly? Okay. You may have had this conversation that my manager had with me, but if you started 10 years or newer, you didn't, because this didn't exist. And I'll paint the picture. But my manager took me out to Denny's. And he says, actually, a place called Sherry's, but it's just like Denny's. He took me to Sherry's restaurant. Any of you know Sherry's restaurant? I see a couple. They know what I'm talking about. And he took out a napkin. And on the napkin, he put a funnel. And he said, Patrick, if you want to be successful in this business, all you've got to do is get in front of a lot of people. Folks, that is the worst possible advice he could have given me. Now, here's where there's going to be a little crossover, okay? And I'm going to bring it back to your model right now. And actually, it applies to your model very, very well. And I'll explain how it does in a second. But he told me, Patrick, you just have to get in front of a lot of people. So what did I do? Before he would hire me, he said I had to have so many hundred names of people who'd be willing to talk to me in a shoebox on a 3x5 card. So I'm 24 years old. My wife and I, after working our respective jobs, would go to his office, which was just the second floor apartment building, a little one-bedroom place, had two desks in it. That he and his wife, who worked there during the day, would leave. We would come. And he handed me the Seattle phone book, which is about this thick, and said, have fun. And I called for hour upon hour, day after day, for almost an entire year to fill up this shoebox with names. It was the most miserable experience of my entire life, but I wanted it that badly. And so he said, Patrick, you just, and here are the numbers, folks. I kept really good numbers. So watch this thing. I had to talk to 100 people to get 10 of them who would come see me. Now, let me take a little dissection. You know the cool thing about your organization? You've got leads. You've got people who say, yes, I'd be willing to talk to you. You know that it's even that they're interested. I did literally. I talked to 100 people. I'd find 10 of them that'd be willing to come see me. And I had no idea, Andy, if they wanted, they just were willing to talk to me, okay? And here's what I found. True story. Of the 10 that would come in, 6 of those should have never been there. I have no idea what they were looking for. They didn't need a life insurance agent. They needed like a priest or a psychiatrist or something. But it wasn't me, you know? It was like, I think they're sitting there at home saying, really? Someone's willing to talk to me? I'm going, you know? So what would happen? I would have to talk to 100 to meet with 10 to find 4 that were qualified candidates. Here's the cool thing about your system right now. You're just getting those 4. Okay? So you've never had to work. If you work in the NAA lead system, you've never had to do this model right here. But I'm telling you, I did. That's how I started. So talk to 100, meet with 10 to find 4. And I'll tell you what, about 6 or 8 months ago, I came up with an analogy for these 4. These 4 are like leftovers. Let me explain. When you make a great meal for yourself and you have food left over in the pot, if you're like us, you don't just take it right to the garbage and take that pot and scrape the leftovers right in the garbage. No, that'd be wasteful. So you get out a plate, clean plate, you scrape it onto the plate, you put cellophane over the top, and you say, you know what? That is going to be dinner for tomorrow night. Well, you get home from work that next day, and you know what? All of a sudden that, it didn't look quite so good because you had it last night, so you fixed something else. And so that leftovers that was hot the day before, now completely chilled, and it's now somewhere behind the milk. Okay? And about a week later, as you're digging for the leftover sour cream to try and put on your potato, you find this plate of food with green stuff growing over the top of it, somewhere touching the back wall of the fridge, and you go, what is that? I don't even remember fixing that. And you take it promptly to the garden and you scrape it out. And it's at that point you sort of realize that leftovers have to sufficiently chill before you throw them out. I mean, you just can't throw them out hot, baby. That's wasteful. Well, if you chill them first, make a little science experiment, then it's not wasteful. So that's what these four people are like. They're the four people. I meet with 10, six of them were a waste of time, four of them would be great. The kind of person where I'd call my wife and go, honey, I just had the best appointment. I guarantee this is going to be something. This is going to be one of the best sales I've ever made. Of course, they didn't have an app or a check, but I was certain it was going to be, you know? And here's what happens, though. Just like leftovers, two of those four begin to chill. Meaning, all of a sudden, they're not calling me back quite so quickly. Then pretty soon, they're not calling me back at all. Then I show up one day in my office, and there's this restraining order typed to the door. It's like, leave me alone! Okay, that was hyperbole, but you know what I'm saying. And I found that, folks, my model when I started, I had to talk to 100, to meet with 10, to find four that were solid prospects to write to. And I worked that way for year after year after year. For 10 years, that's the way I worked. Probably more, probably 12 years. But everything changed right out there. That's my hometown. Who's my Pew Alec friend? Where is she? There she is. That's right, that's my good chair. Remind me of your name? Karen. Karen, do you recognize that? That's Gig Harbor. That's where I live now. Normally, Mount Rainier would be right there in the background, but I had to take this picture on a cloudy day because someone needed it for a presentation. So anyway, right out there, about how many years now ago, let me think, my son was 6 at the time, he's now 59 years ago, everything changed. Can you guys hear okay? Everything changed. Remember that year I told you that I was working 100 hours for this 4-month period? That is not exaggeration. I actually did the math on it. And I realized I put in most people's 2.5 weeks of work in 1 week. And I did it week after week after week. And the reality was that particular year I was working harder than I'd ever worked. And I had less to show for it. And man, it is just coming down, is it not? That was something else. So I was out there fishing. I don't do a lot of fishing, but this particular year, during the year that I was doing so poorly, but working so hard, I was out in the Puget Sound fishing with my 6-year-old son. And the way we fish it, now we're fishing for salmon, and because it's just a little kick-around boat, we got a any fishermen in here, any people like to fish? Okay, a couple. Well, the way we fish out here, right around that corner where you can't see, is we take the line and put a lure on it and go about 250 feet down, and it's called jigging. You just sort of bounce the lure off the bottom because that's where, supposedly, all the big fish are just swimming right there along the bottom. So we were out there, the two of us, and I was doing the pole, and all of a sudden, about an hour into it, the pole starts to just sort of do this. And if you're a fisherman, it doesn't matter, you know, it just gets the heart racing more. And hey, buddy, come here, grab the pole. So, you know, it's a long ways down. And I could tell by the action on the pole, it wasn't a very big fish. And so I knew he could manage this, you know, and he's bringing this thing up. And sure enough, he brings it up to the boat. And it is a salmon, but it's not big enough to keep. Frank high-fived, way to go, buddy, caught your first fish, you know. But unfortunately, we got to throw it back. Oh, Dad, really? Yeah, I'm sorry, we can't keep it. You know, we get in trouble if we keep it. So we got to throw it back. And we fish for another hour. And an hour later, then the pole does this. Bam, bam. And you know, that tip is just buried in the water. It's like, sorry, buddy, I got this one. You know? This sucker up because I am certain that on the end of this pole is the largest salmon I've ever caught. I've got some good big salmon. And I'm trying to teach my 6-year-old son how to properly net a salmon with a net on the side of that screen up there, you know, because there's an art to it. And he's standing at the side of the boat waiting for this thing, and I don't see it at all because it's so big. It just never. And after a while, on the end of the line, I hear this squid. Ah! We caught a shark! Well, it wasn't a shark. Oops, where's my picture? Maybe it's not here. Oh, it's not there. Oh, I had a picture of it. I deleted it. It looks just like a shark, but it's called a dogfish. A dogfish is just this worthless, bottom-sucking, salmon-munching piece of garbage that swallows your lure. But it looks just like a shark. Cut the line, throw it back.
fish some more, catch another one, not a keeper, catch another one, not a keeper. At the very end of the day, we finally catch a salmon that's big enough, not huge, but big enough to be able to take home and keep. I'm just out there again, in the middle of the one of the worst years I've ever had, working harder than I'd ever worked. And on the way back to the dock, I had this, what I call an epiphany. And the reason I call it an epiphany is there are those times in life where you have those ideas that you know didn't come from you because you're just way too smart. Yeah, I had a lot of those. So this is one of those. And it was really a thought, a picture, and an idea all wrapped in one. But I'll give you the picture. The picture was, well, actually, the thought first came first. The thought was this: Patrick, the reason that you're being so unsuccessful this year is because you are running your business exactly like you fish do. You had to bring all six fish into the boat, measure them, weigh them, touch them, feel them, decide if they were a keeper before you decided it was a keeper. And the picture that came next was me sitting in my office chair with a fishing pole. And the thought was, Patrick, the reason you're being so unsuccessful is because you're having to bring all 10 of those people into your office, meet with them, talk with them, ask questions, spend a couple hours with them to decide if they're even a keeper or not. And the light bulb started to come on. I pictured myself fishing with this fishing pole. Well, that was only part one. 2 weeks later, I'm walking right down the harbor where I live, and I look out, and there are two men that I recognize as part of the Puyallup Indian Tribe, which is real close to where we live. There were two metal boats, and strung between them was a net. And this happened in a very short period of time. And I stood there and watched, not thinking much about anything, just sort of watched them, and I got there right at the tail end, and I watched them pull this net up into their boat, and open it up, and spill onto their boat a boatload of nothing but keepers. And I went, whoa, that's how I want to fish. And then the thought hit me, the second part of the epiphany. That's how I want to fish in business. If I could figure out a way to fish with a net instead of a fishing pole, everything would be changed. Because here's what kind of net they were fishing with, folks. It's something called a gill net, if you aren't familiar with the fish. And a gill net is the perfect fish-catching contraption. Because, double hit the button there. Because the little fish swim right through it because they're so small. The holes are big enough that the fat ones, the ones that they can keep, swim into this because they don't see it. They get stuck because they're so fat. They can't swim through. And then when they try and back out, they can't. Their gills get caught. That's a gill net. And so when a gill net comes up, they've got nothing but keepers because all the little fish swam right through. And I said, you know what? If I could figure out a way to fish, to run my business with a net, and only meet with those who were interested in what I had to say, interested in the product, first it'll be a lot more fun, but how much more successful would it be? And the reason I start with this, I wanted to tell you how this all came about. And folks, simply put, I said this yesterday, this is the part I like least about it because, again, I wrote the book. I wish it was someone else's book that I could be saying this about, because that would look, you know, so self-serving. I apologize for that. But here's the reality. In simple terms, the book is your net. Let me put it down this way. The book will do for you in this space what Andy and his team are doing for you in mortgage term leads. Basically, Andy has created for you in NAA, he's created a net, hasn't he?
Absolutely.
Yeah, all those people that aren't interested swim right through. And he puts you in front of people who want what you have for mortgage protection or final expense. What this book does is think of it not as a book to read, think of it as a marketing tool, think of it as your net, okay? So in simple terms, that's all it is. Actually, does someone have their copy here with them? If it may or may not, that'd be great. I just want to reference it a couple times here, thank you.
The spine's broken.
Look at that, it's been red. I know a lot of you read it. Like I made people feel guilty last night. It's like, no, really, I read your book. I've read it a couple times. It's just that this is a new one. I was just playing with you. So I was having some fun last night.
That was him over there.
But this is simply there, folks, to get you in front of the right people. Because here's the deal. I've been doing this 4 years now. We've kept good statistics. The numbers are exactly the same as my numbers phone calling. Meaning, if you give out 10 books, and we're going to talk about it later today, but if you give out 10 books, half of them, even if you do it right, half of them won't get read. It's part of the game, part of the deal. But you don't know which half of them. For instance, if Andy mailed out leads, does he only mail to people who are interested? I heard you guys mail like 1.5 million leads a week? Seriously? I mean, that's like crazy numbers. Think about it. If he only, he doesn't know which of those 1.5 million people are going to be interested, so you got to mail to all of them. Same thing with the book. You don't know which two people are going to be interested, so you give a book to the 10, okay? Now here's the deal, of those 10, half of them won't read it because people aren't readers. We're going to show you how to raise that percentage if you choose to use this. Half of them won't get read, just like those four people in the funnel. They look like they're all good prospects, but you know what, only two of them will make, and these are low figures, but I'm going to be conservative. Two of those four will do anything with it. So the numbers are the same. Instead of me meeting with 10 people to sell to, I now, and other agents have now been able to give out 10 books and make 2 sales. But here's the cool part. They're only meeting with the 2 people who are interested in what it is that they read. And I'm going to get into that more later as we get going. Matter of fact, Fitz, can you do me a favor?
Yes, sir.
This is an on-the-fly. No one, I've never done this publicly before. I have a live DVD of a workshop. It's just brand new, about 2 weeks ago. And on here, I told you about the guy, John Sankin from Minneapolis, and I wanted to show you his testimony. It might take some minute to find that. It's on DVD 2.
Okay.
On the front screen, there will be a menu. It says scene selection.
Yep.
Go to scene selection and select John Sankin. I'd love to show you his 9-minute interview. It will change your life, okay? And I'll keep talking as they're bringing that up. Just someone give me the high sign and back when we get there, okay? But folks, the book is simply, and I had one agent the other day go, you know, you didn't answer all of the questions in this. And I said, huh, you think? Why? Because if you haven't read it, 3 times in here I say, you need to go back to the individual who gave this to you to figure out what it is that works for you. This is a conversation. So this is not intended to sell the policy. This is not intended to make it so thorough that they go do it on the internet. First of all, they wouldn't be able to do it on the internet. This is intended to start a conversation, and you'll see in John's testimony here in a minute. But I'll tell you what, folks, when someone comes to you, like you're going to hear with John, and they say, Karen, I read that chapter you told me to read. Is that really true? I mean, I'm going to be in the highest tax bracket for the rest of my life. Is there really something I can do? How is it possible I've never heard about this? Is this really true? And if it is, we've got to get together. Do you know how much fun it is to sell life insurance to someone who is asking you to get together because what they've just read? And I'm going to say this. I think I mentioned it yesterday. I think. I'm not positive. What is a more powerful selling motivation, want or need? Want. Life insurance through its whole history has been sold on need. And you know what? I'm not talking about the need for life insurance in terms of, we'll always sell based on need. We'll sell based on death benefit need, whether it be for the mortgage or for something else, okay? I'm talking about the motivation to buy. The client's motivation has always been need. I don't really want this sucker, but I need it. Do you know how it changes when they come to you and they say, not only do I need it, but man, how can I get this? Because traditionally, Dennis and I were talking about this in the car on the way over, traditionally life insurance has been sold backwards for this type of sale. It's been, what's the most amount of insurance I can get for the least amount of money? And that's pure expense. And if I reverse that statement, it would come across, what is the least amount of insurance I can buy for the most amount of money? But I'm going to change it a little bit, because I'm not looking about the least amount of insurance. It is proper amount of insurance. Proper amount of insurance. But instead of putting the least in, if you put the most in, baby, it creates a want like you haven't ever seen. Before we get the video, I had one agent, 6 months in the business. I heard him say this at his president's club. I knew this going into it, though, because he called me and told me. He came to a workshop like this in L.A. He'd been 6 months in the business. He handed this book to an associate he knew of his, probably of his dad's. He was a young guy. I don't know if he's a physician or whatever. But he simply called this client to get together, to confirm the appointment for tomorrow. They had an appointment set for the next day. He simply called him to confirm the appointment. And he goes, I could not get this guy off the phone. He had questions from your book. He was asking, he said this, he goes, how much can I put into this thing? Can I put in $82,000 a year? Can I do this for my kids? He said, literally, all he did is show up the next day for the appointment, and the guy had to check, basically, I mean, we're good to go?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that's the one we're going to want in just a second, so thank you. And it was because what? The guy had read something, and it now became a want, just not a need, okay? And remember, I'm going to say it 3 or 4 times today, because I want Andy not to get mad at me. I'm not taking away anything from what you're doing right now. This is just another arrow that for the appropriate party, and you'll see what that is. Let's go ahead and roll this video here.
Hey, good afternoon, Patrick. My name is John Seifing, and I'm from Hutchinson, Minnesota. I've been in the insurance industry about 18 months, and my journey in the industry started actually with an airline pilot. I was an airline pilot for about 15 years, working for a charter carrier owned by Northwest Airlines. And when the Northwest Delta merger went through, I found myself out of work. And one of the things that I went through in route to becoming an insurance agent is I've got a cousin who is a human resources director for General Mills, and she had me get my resume and credentials in her as quickly as possible. Thought it was good, she went for the job, and it turned out, one, I didn't get an interview, two, I didn't get the job, and three, I was one of 5,000 applicants for the position. And as it turned out, they hired a friend of the chief pilot who had a typewriter for the airplane that we were flying, so I mean, I think even if I would have had space shuttle time, it wouldn't have made any difference, so I didn't get the job. My wife ran into an old friend of mine who was actually in the industry, and he said to my wife, hey, let's interview John and see if he'd be interested in working in the insurance industry. And one thing led to another. I went through the interview, did a lot of soul searching, probably over about a month, deciding if I needed to have the strength with aviation or to start a career, and I decided to start a career in insurance. And really what happened, the great thing that happened with me and my career and using your book is a friend of mine from college, Glenn, when I started the business, was a significant wage earner, and I just decided I would send him a book in the mail and see what happens. And probably 10 days after I sent him the book, he called me and said, hey, can we get together, talk about the book, and catch up on life? And so we made an appointment, and I went to his office, and we spent about 10 minutes catching up on life. And then he said, talk to me about tax-free retirement. And one thing led to another, but he said, John, I'm a high wage earner, I'm in the highest tax bracket, I'll be in the highest tax bracket for the rest of my life. I got no interest in deferring taxes. I can't save $5,000 a year off and tell me about tax-free retirement. So we talked about it. I pulled up a demonstration for $1 million face on policy. And he said, you know, John, this is really, really outstanding. He said, I can afford way more than that. And so I said, no, well, let's just try it at $50 million. And I pulled up that illustration and said, well, I guess this is probably a little more than I would like to spend anything between. So we ended up settling on $5 million face loan. Currently paying about $237,000 in annual premium with about $70,000 in target premium. And the really great thing is I illustrated at premium, and he came back at super preferred, so his health status is great. His ability to use this product for tax-free retirement is just almost unparalleled. And I'm optimistic that I can do the same thing with the other executives and traders of the business that he owns and operates.
So how many times have you presented illustration where the client has said to you, I can do way more than that?
not too often, but every time they see us, they say, wow, this is just incredible. You know, where can we get started at?
What was it like like giving up a career that you had spent, you know, 16 years or more, 20 years, you know, most of your adult life doing, transitioning into becoming your own boss?
You know, it was really difficult, and probably to this day it's difficult. It's flying with your plane is like a boost to an alcoholic. I mean, it's really in my soul, but I really, really enjoy self-employment. I mean, every stone and the foundation is for myself and my family. When I was an employee of a major airline, I was nothing more than puppet on string, and I just had no security. I didn't really realize that until the door was slammed closed up on me, and I really enjoy and appreciate and love self-employment.
Was there any thought ever in your career, being the senior person that you were, that you would have been a person to find themselves without a job?
No, I mean, real off my way, and I talked about our future, my career, what we wanted to do, and I'm sure I said it a thousand times, but I think I'm bulletproof doing what I'm doing because I was senior, I was experienced, I was a captain, I was a check airman. I never in a million years thought that Northwest would go out of business, and I would be left home, and I was.
So this one case that you helped your friend put in place was about $70,000 in target, and up at that point, how long have you been in the business?
Just slightly over a year.
Before that, what was the largest case, largest target premium case you had done prior to that?
Reddit 10,000.
Okay, so seven times bigger. That's a pretty significant jump. Income-wise, I know oftentimes one thing agents find themselves in early years in the business, it's struggling. It's a tough business to get started, and I think I try to let them know that this is not something that's going to happen overnight. I imagine you found that probably, you know, it's a slow starting, but how is it closing a case like that? And obviously the amount of money just from a commission standpoint, has that changed your perspective any in terms of going forward, what the opportunity might be?
Well, I guess I'd say I'm just excited about tomorrow because I think that there are so many opportunities out there that you need to, you know, turn over every rock and look underneath and see what's there. You know, revisit those old friendships, revisit people from college. Everybody needs what we can offer, and whether it's, you know, a $1,200 target payment or a $70,000 target payment, those people are out there that can need our services.
Now, so you just to make sure we got this straight, you just decided to mail this book to a college buddy. How long have it been since you've seen him?
It's been probably 16 years.
So out of the blue, you haven't really seen him, but you just mailed to him?
Correct.
And was there any follow-up other than that?
No, he called me.
So he called you, you mailed the book, about 10 days later, he calls you back and says, we need to get together.
Yep, I put my business card in the book. Basically, the chapter that talks about, I think it's high income earners or high wage earners, put my business card in that chapter, and he called me back about 10 days later.
Did that surprise you?
It did. Yeah, I really didn't expect a call back. It seems like in my practice, I have a difficult time having people call me back. That's one of the stumbling blocks, I think, of the business. It's difficult for people to contact you back, but maybe you call me back.
What do you think motivated him to call you back? What, or maybe he told you?
Well, he didn't tell me until really we were in depth in the interview, and I know for sure what it was the tax-free retirement plan. He told me in the interview that he was a high wage earner, he was in the highest tax bracket, he was in the highest tax bracket for the rest of his life. And so his only interest right now is, you know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, but not anymore. And he could see that this was at least something worth exploring. And I think because of our relationship from college, I think he knew me and trusted me and felt that there was an opportunity that he needed to hear more.
So the book stirred something in him to definitely want to know more.
Definitely.
John, do you think you would have been able to get in and see and get in front of your friend from college and present this in person, or would you have even tried to without the book? Or how did the book help you in that regard?
Well, I guess it's a book giving me a lot of confidence. And I'm sure that because he's a significant wage earner, he's probably got a lot of people knocking on his door to solicit business. And I I guess I'd say I would think it was 50-50 on whether or not he would have met me in a professional manner to discuss business without the book. But it was clear from the conversation when he called me that I was going to get an appointment without arm twisting, and it was clearly a door open for me.
So did it change the dynamic of what it would have been otherwise if you had tried to contact him to get an appointment versus him calling you? Or maybe I should say, how did it change the dynamic?
Well, I think the dynamic was he was interested, he had a want, and he thought that there was going to be some tax saving potential, and he was interested.
Good. Had he ever heard this before?
I have seen it.
Okay. Now, last question is, from that, there are some other, peers of his in the business, that this one book that was given, has he passed it along? Are there other opportunities for you with some of maybe his peers and partners?
My understanding is yes. One, he's the president of the division. He's on the board of directors at the company. And I think there's going to be a substantial opportunity for this tax-free retirement planning for the other board members and some of the other significant wage earners in the business. But I think I'm going to have the opportunity to present and sell and have a significant impact in their lives as well.
All right, last question. To the last time. So with the $70,000 target premium, how did that help and encourage you and your family at this stage in the business, knowing that you've gone through a transition period of timing out work and also starting a new career?
That's almost a tough answer. My wife is, she had essentially 5 part-time jobs, and when I told her what the target premium was going to be, she literally felt her knees and cried about what it could do for us.
That's awesome. And just the beginning. John, thank you for taking the time, sharing your story. It's a powerful story, it's an encouraging story, because I can tell you there are hundreds, if not thousands, of agents who are experiencing exactly what you have in the past and looking for a new opportunity. And it's exciting to see when someone realizes just how great this can be for not only themselves, their family, but for the clients and those that they're serving. So thanks for taking the time to come in and be a part of this.
My pleasure. It's great to be here. Great to be part of the industry. And thanks for your help. And it's really appreciated.
I don't know if you could see that at the end, but here is this big, tough, I think I'm back on, big, tough Midwestern agriculture farm boy who literally was in tears. Did you tell he was crying there at the end?
Yeah.
Let me tell you how that interview came about.